they address things in a more whole body approach. They see the body as one big kinetic chain. I try to even take a step beyond that and think about how, you know, what you just said is that preventative care is actually the future. That's how it should be. Rather than just addressing someone's pain and then getting them back to just a state of normalcy.
Are you struggling with chronic pain and looking for a natural approach to overcome it? Chronic pain, something I know about all too well, is a common issue that affects millions of people, and managing it can be a challenging and frustrating experience. And so many people turn to surgery or medication as a solution, or even resort to just having to live with it, allowing it to affect quality of life day in and day out. But there are actually many alternative treatments and strategies that can help alleviate pain without the need for invasive procedures or potentially harmful drugs. Welcome back, athletes. I'm your host, Sherry Shaban, and with each episode, I am honored to be your coach and guide in the journey to fall in love with fitness and ultimately yourself. My intention in each episode is to help you release the old story of who you are and step into the one you are always meant to be. Through these conversations, together, we will step away from focusing on all the doing and step into the being so that health and fitness is not just what you do, but who you are. In this episode of Fall in Love with Fitness, Dr. Jason Wan, a board-certified orthopedic clinical specialist, shares his journey of overcoming obesity and chronic pain to become a fitness expert and physical therapist. He emphasizes the importance of a holistic approach to managing chronic pain, including strength training, mobility, and nutrition. Dr. Wan's goal is to empower his clients to make sustainable lifestyle changes and develop healthy, lasting habits. He also discusses the impact of trauma on our belief systems and self-doubt, and how rewiring our brain can lead to a more fulfilling life. Now, what you're going to be walking away with after listening to this episode is number one, the impact of nutrition on lean body mass and overall health. Number two, the power of a practitioner's own experience with adversity to foster empathy and effective pain management. And number three, the importance of movement for pain management and overall well-being. Number four, how trauma can change the brain and the importance of addressing it for personal growth. And then finally, number five, the importance of therapeutic alliance and belief in the effectiveness of the plan. Now we're just about to dive into it and meet Dr. Wan, but before we do that, I want to quickly remind you that if you rate and review this podcast on iTunes, giving me a 5-star review, and then sending me that screenshot to sherry@sherryshaban.com, you'll receive a 6-month premium version of the HIIT Dex app, where you can transform your health and body in less than 12 minutes a day. All right, athletes, now without further ado, let's meet Dr. Wan. Hi, Dr. Jason. Welcome to the show.
Hi, great having you. And thank you so much for inviting me.
Well, thank you so much for being here. And I'm excited to get into this conversation for actually, I want to say almost my own selfish reasons. And I know that you are a board certified orthopedic clinical specialist, and you help people get out of chronic pain. And it's not a short term fix. You really help them actually get their life back without the use of surgery or injections or pills or any other expensive manual therapies. And this conversation is going to hit home for me because I don't know if you're aware of my story, Dr. Jason, but I've had surgery on my back twice. And when I was a teenager, I was struck by a car. I had my first surgery within 6 months of that car accident. And then I went on to have a second back surgery. This was in my early 30s. I was just opening up my first CrossFit gym. And I can tell you that chronic pain from experience is brutal. It completely takes over your life. And your mood changes, your attitude changes, your identity changes, because now everything's about your condition. You're angry a lot of the time because, well, you don't get to do a lot of stuff. All the things that you want to do, you can no longer do. And you're in that place of blame and criticism. And so I remember this taking just a massive, massive space in my life. And so I'm excited to hear what you want to share today around how we can manage chronic pain without it needing to, again, result in all of the therapies and remedies that we currently know as. So welcome again to the show. And before we get in, maybe we just even talk a little bit about your story. How did you get to the space? I know you're a fitness dude and you play a lot of sports and things, but share with us a little bit around how you got to this place.
Perfect. Thank you so much. And for starters, yes, I'm a doctor of physical therapy And it's specifically, I specialize in orthopedics. So by definition, orthopedics is just having an expertise around any joint, ligament, muscle, or nerve-related type of injury. And how I actually got into this space, I guess the first thing that got me more so into like fitness and exercise and being like, hey, that's what I want to do in life, is I was actually quite an obese kid growing up. I was actually, I was actually criticized quite a bit for my weight and my stature. And I guess I was always told like, hey, you like sports, but you're not really capable. So I always had this kind of prove them wrong type of mentality. And I did. I actually opened up an encyclopedia and I started studying nutrition and strength when I was just 11, 12 years old, believe it or not. And I actually lost a significant amount of weight I don't know how, but just by strength training, starting eating the right foods at a very young age. So that's what really enthralled me into who I am today, which, when I got into high school, got into four different sports. I was one of the fastest kids in the city for a while. And after that, went to UC Davis, got my exercise biology degree, and I started to find an inclination towards helping people with strength training and just things that I know. But I guess the main thing that really got me into physical therapy was actually my dad, who got sick. He has actually dealt with a lot of chronic pain, not throughout his life, but when he got diagnosed with stage four cancer. And that was a really tough time in my life where I was just a freshman in college and I was going back on a weekly basis, just driving back home to see him, to understand that I didn't have him, for forever. And I eventually had to get him off the couch. He lost a lot of his strength and he started dealing with a lot of back pain. So I, or a freshman in college, I didn't know really what to do with that at that point. But after he passed, it was really struck me a lot in terms of what I wanted to do in life. And ultimately, I wanted people to not have the same type of, I guess, future or type of regrets, that my dad had. And I didn't want people to have, a father figure in their life lost. So ultimately, I started helping a lot of people worldwide with just helping them on how to make the right lifestyle and behavioral changes around strength training, mobility, taking care of their nutrition, really making exercise more of a habit rather than feeling like a chore, something I have to do or force in. And I guess that's kind of my story. I have a lot of whys for what I do.
Wow. So profound, and thank you so much for sharing. And I want to hold space for you a little bit around losing your father to cancer. I also lost my mom to cancer, and I can so resonate with all the things that you're saying. And it's interesting because my mom was somebody her whole life, like she was always, focused on her weight, and just like many women and people in general, just weight was kind of this thing that she was always trying to get a hold of in her life. And I remember in her last weeks, I remember I was in the washroom with her, and she's just kind of standing there in the mirror and was like, "Oh my God, like my whole life I've wanted to release this weight, and here I am. I've done it, and it's not even in the way that I would have ever wanted." And so that really struck with me, and it just brought that up. And again, coming back to the lifestyle and coming back to the quality of life is really where we're trying to get at. And I also want to honor you again just for being that 12-year-old curious boy who's like, okay, I want to learn about nutrition, I want to learn about fitness. Like, how does that even happen at 12 years old? I'm just curious because I've got two girls, and one is 15, one will be 14 this summer, and I mean, just to see them actually learning, like wanting to self-educate and really get themselves into this whole space, I mean, that's massive. So what was that for you at that time?
I think it was just, I had kind of a childhood where, when I was really young, I was the big boy in class, and the big boy allows you to have a certain quality. Like, I almost thought of like, hey, like I'm the big boy. I can do things. And I got away with a lot of things when I was like 4 or 5 years old. It's just being the big guy in class. But then when, ultimately when people started, going through puberty, and then I was still the short kind of like big kid, I started to get just a lot of really bad criticism, a lot of taunts and things that I've repressed for a very long time. It got to a point where I was just eating lunch in a bathroom. So there's a lot of just dark things I don't really have to go into. But I think a lot of that was then, I think my dad's genes and even my sister were very competitive people. Me and my sister, we got at each other's necks. We played video games. We'd really, it was like, who's the better basketball player kind of thing. And that type of stubborn mentality, I think, really pushed me over the edge to take really big, massive action, more at massive action than just, oh, let me just start exercising. But really, I was like, I need to find a deeper understanding of how to strengthen my body, how to be kind of start, I started learning things about like caloric deficit and just like how to lose weight properly at a really young age. And that I lost 20 to 25 pounds in less than a year. And I became extremely fast and I became one of the best athletes in my high school. So I think long story short, that sense of like hitting kind of rock bottom, like just like with anybody with chronic pain, there's at some point in life, you got to just say to yourself, well, maybe these injections and some of these other therapies, they're just temporary fixes. I really need to think about, okay, I got myself into this place in the, you know, like I got to get myself out of it. And I have to take the right, essentially a more active approach and start prioritizing my health, learning more about the things that we can share about today. But yeah, that's kind of like what it translated and perspired into is like, that's why I started my business and that's what I love to do.
Wow, so good. I love everything about what you're saying. And what I love the most is when I speak to another professional who also comes from a lot of struggle and pain and has a deep sense of understanding and empathy for anyone that he or she is going to work with. Because I think that's where the magic is. It's that spot of connection. And so to really be able to have gone through that and to understand what that would entail and what that would feel like, even to be on that receiving end of the criticism and really people making you very aware that there's something flawed about you that needs to be changed, and then being able to really use that to empower yourself to create major transformation and then help others do the same. I can't even explain to you that level of admiration. So I honor you so much for that, and I'm so excited to learn more from you. And the other thing I hear you saying, because this is, and as an osteopath myself and a certified athletic therapist, I think you probably also get that space where it's very tunnel vision around what's going on with that person's injury. And so somebody can present themselves with a, chronic shoulder pain or carpal tunnel or whatever, and then you just focus on that, and then just focus on that body part, but not really address all of the lifestyle factors. And what I heard you say is mobility and movement and exercise, and also focusing on nutrition to make sure that you're also handling inflammation. And so there's all of these components to it, and I believe that this is really the way of the future, and this is the way of transformation. And more of us are starting to get to that space where now we're looking at all of these other lifestyle factors versus it just being the medication or just the brace or just that treatment session. And the treatment session is great and it addresses a lot of things right there in the moment. However, what happens beyond that? Because that could be 1 hour in your week, but what happens the rest of the time, right? To add in to that. So share with me then what your approach is, Dr. Jason, to really help people get out of chronic pain.
Absolutely. And just to kind of touch on the basis of what you just said about how, you know, especially physical therapy in the United States, a lot of it's still just kind of direct orders from the physician. And so, you know, you'll see shoulder pain, and then therefore what's required by law is just strictly treat the shoulder. As you kind of venture into what I do, which is more holistic, or let's say there's a lot of cash pay type of PTs out there, they address things in a more whole body approach. They see the body as one big kinetic chain. I try to even take a step beyond that and think about how, you know, what you just said is that preventative care is actually the future. That's how it should be. Rather than just addressing someone's pain and then getting them back to just a state of normalcy, like getting back to square zero, they're going to fall back into that pain state because you haven't addressed any lifestyle factors and they're not being consistent with their exercise. So I guess the way that I kind of approach things is in a way where we're teaching people the right types of strength exercises to reduce their pain immediately, while also factoring in getting a good baseline of their mobility. So I oftentimes will do Zoom sessions just like this, get a kind of a good understanding of like how their neck moves or how their shoulder moves, and then being able to address exercises right then and there that's kind of solve essentially the root cause of their issues. Sometimes the root cause is not purely anatomical, meaning that just because you have a stiff neck, is it purely just because you have some joints or muscles that are tight? Or is it because, okay, you're going through financial stressors, you're going through some relationship issue, the, you know, you're fighting with your daughter or son, and that's actually causing a lot of grief and tension in your neck. So we factor in the entire person as a whole, which is called more the biopsychosocial approach.
Right, I'm
It's
hearing that.
factoring in, yeah, it's factoring in your socioeconomic status, your culture, values, beliefs, the people around you, the environment that you're in, your community. And so people that are generally more socially isolated or people that are, you know, socioeconomically not in the best place financially are generally people that have more tension and more pain in their body. So we factor all that in. And that's why I like what I do is like, we don't just factor in just anatomical things. We factor in strength, mobility, take the person in, all their emotional baggage that comes in with it, and being able to solve each of these issues, again, from a mental, spiritual strength type of sense. And the last thing is that we focus on just recovery as habits. So like, you know, focusing on their sleep habits, focusing on the food that they put into their body. And also I say this with confidence a lot, it's like, I don't know a lot of people with like better habits in California than me. So as far as from a strength and mobility standpoint, I move 10 to 20 times a day. It's something that I pride myself in is movement to me is as automated as brushing my teeth, right? And that's what I try to really enforce and empower my clients to do is to not just see my program or anybody's program as like just, okay, get out of pain and then that's it and then stop doing it, but rather continue that on, give them every necessary tool to be the best versions of themselves.
Right. Yeah, so good. So good. And you know, it's interesting when we look at the biopsychosocial model, and that's actually what I did my thesis on when I was doing osteo school. And it's interesting
Nice.
even when we add like that layer of culture, right? Where depending even on a person's ethnicity, how did you handle pain? Like
For sure.
how was pain accepted in your culture? And it's interesting just to think about this because we think pain is just physical, right? We just think like, okay, something happened to my body. And I must have an injury, there's something going on, but we don't actually take into consideration the emotional impact, right? The stress that maybe is going on in our lives, or even how do we deal with pain, right? And many of us could be actually managing pain for a long time, not really saying anything, not really going to see someone like you because, like, it's okay, we all have pain, just suck it up. Like, that's just part of life, right? And so, something that you said, and I couldn't agree more around the importance of movement. And I do believe we're meant to move. And I want to kind of get away from that we should and we're supposed to and that type of conversation. But when you see our physical bodies and what it is actually able to do, and then you start to just observe our evolution that we used to have to move to get our food and we had to move to go to work and we walked hours every single day to be able to do the smallest things. Whereas now everything is so automated. And you can order your groceries right here, right now, get them delivered in an hour. You can do all your shopping and get your medication. We don't actually need to leave our house anymore. And I think, again,
Correct.
this needs to be addressed. And sometimes we think of exercise as like this extra burden that we have to do. We don't have time for it. But it's interesting because the word time is really, it's really very relative. And it just shows our level of priority because we make time for other things. We make time for Netflix. We make time to be on social media. We make time for all the things that maybe don't serve us so much. So for a person, for example, who is sedentary and who hasn't maybe their entire lives exercised, and I actually see a lot of people, and I'm sure you do too, they're in their 40s and their 50s, but never played sports and never were actually in any physical activity. And I noticed that with them, that's very foreign. Just to even get started and feel uncomfortable in the body, get the heart rate up, start to sweat, there could be generally a lot of resistance. So I'm just curious about your approach around that. How do you get somebody to go from sedentary, never exercising, to actually making that more like brushing their teeth?
I think it's more so you have to start off with quick wins. So, you know, I call it LTAS, which is like the little tiny action steps. So a lot of people are looking at, okay, if I need to get out of pain, if I also want to like lose like 20 pounds, if you will, is that they're looking at it as if like there's just like three large steps. And it's like, you know, if you ever lunge up like a bleacher seat and it's like the steps are really high, it's just like, oh man, it takes so much effort just to get to like the first step. So you instead try to break down like one step into like five steps, right? So think about, okay, if you want to just get started on 3 days a week, we'll start off with just 10 squats right now. Right, get the little tiny action step necessary. Get on your tennis shoes, you know, brush them off. There's been a lot of dust on there, so get those little tiny action steps going. Because over time, if you just create one step at a time, you know, there's this book called Atomic Habits by James Clear, where you know you're saying that you want to be at least 1% better to be at least 32% better throughout the year. And so, looking at just how can you make things just out. As we are psychologically bred into the law of convenience, as in Amazon Prime, 2 day shipping, you know, you just said like Instacart, we get things shipped to our house immediately, our groceries, is take that type of psychological convenience and how can you make exercise more convenient to you? So if a gym is 20 minutes away, can you instead just buy some dumbbells and have it right in your office? Okay, can you have a foam roll right inside your bedroom? So I specifically equip. And I guess I booby trap my house fully with every single room has some sort of equipment in it, a resistance band, a foam roll, dumbbells. Thankfully enough, my gym is just 10 feet away inside the garage. But the law of convenience, if we're already bred into what's convenient to us, try to bake yourself into that. So like make things more convenient for you. And I always say like, you know, even we doing 30 minutes a day out of a 24-hour kind of time that we have, it's not that much. It's not, again, like you said, you need to make time for the things that we need to prioritize. So even if you can't get started, you know, set a timer for yourself. Try to eliminate all the uncertainty and confusion as a result of exercise, and just simply just set a 3-minute timer. Set a 3-minute timer, stop what you're doing, and simply just do what you think is right. Do some squats, do some crunches, do some stretches to address some stiff areas that you haven't addressed in a long period of time, and just get started. And ultimately, you know, there's a lot of free resources out there, YouTube, your podcast, my podcast. I mean, there's an instrumental amount of resources that you can access. And if and when you feel like you may need somebody to accelerate that process, obviously that's why they have me and you to kind of bridge that gap.
And even starting off with just 5 minutes, right? For those of us who even that 30 minutes is like, oh my God, I'm going to move for 30 minutes. And again, I get that because once upon a time, the thought of me moving for 30 minutes when I was in chronic pain was like, how am I even going to do that? Like, do I even know how to squat? Right. And so I think just starting off very, very small, and then more importantly, not comparing ourselves to first where we want to be and
Of
then to
course.
others who've been doing it long enough or longer than we have. And maybe just give ourselves just that opportunity to focus on 24 hours at a time. What can I do in 24 hours? And then slowly ramp up from there. So another big thing I know that you also talk about is nutrition and just supporting as well your journey with nutrition. Again, I love this conversation because it's so outside of just that treatment session. It's okay, this is what we're doing in the treatment session. Now we have to continue to make the efforts and stay consistent in order to keep our results and continue to progress from here. So what have you addressed nutrition when it comes to controlling chronic pain?
Yeah, so I think part of it is like, let's say there's a person that needs to, for example, lose a little bit of weight in order to decrease the stress off their joints. Oftentimes, you know, there's a lot of ways to address that, whether it's just more whole foods, picking the right foods that are higher in volume but lower in calories. So like fruit's a great example. I think everyone should be getting some sort of fruit or vegetables. At the same time, you know, just understanding the science of things, how being in a caloric deficit, I don't think that everybody needs to track their calories. I'm not huge on saying like everybody needs to track things to the T, especially if you're not like a bodybuilder, for example. But having at least the science of understanding like calories don't have emotions, right? So it's not like a calorie is just a unit of energy. Understand that if you eat less and you actually exercise more, you will get there. I mean, you'll get somewhere, right? And you'll get it further along the way in terms of decreasing stress off your hips, joints, low back, for example, right? You don't have this large belly that's pulling your spine into some compression or shear forces, for example. And I think also at the same time, addressing certain foods that are going to be a little bit more pro-inflammatory, like for example, vegetable oils or sugar. I think sugar is a precursor to literally all disease. You know, it starts with metabolic syndrome, then diabetes. Diabetes progresses to, you know, literally everything that we can think of as far as like cancer and heart attacks, for example. We just need to address some of those things that sometimes we can create very satiating and very tasty foods without the excessive amounts of sodium and vegetable oil kind of added into that. So I like to address a lot of those things in terms of quick meals, especially for those time-strapped people that feel like they don't have time to exercise. Well, obviously, then make meals. You can still make meals convenient, but you don't always have to aim for the fast food. You can still just throw something into a crock pot, very nutritious, very little oil, right? And just Instant Pot it, right? Just set it for 10 minutes, let out the pressure. You have meals for essentially 3 to 5 days. And if you understand that you have like consistent meals over a number of not just weeks, but months, and you stick to the right types of macros that you need, there's no saying that you can gain a ton of lean body mass, decrease your fat, and really set yourself on a trajectory where you're living another 5 to 10 years.
Right. Wow, so good. You know, everything that we're talking about, I just want to share with you the importance of movement and the importance of eating low inflammatory foods. For me, it has absolutely nothing to do with needing to burn a certain number of calories per day or needing to attain a certain number of calories. But Jason, like if I don't move one day, like that's when I actually will have a stiff back. And so for me, movement translates to feeling good, being pain-free. And in the past, when I would get these insane muscle spasms, I mean, I would get back spasms and they would last 2 weeks. And because my job is very physical, that would also mean that I would have to take time off of work to rest my
Of
back.
course.
And in my mind, that this is like in my early 20s, I'm like, I need to lie down. I just need to keep lying down. And the more I would lie down, the more pain I would have. And then I would be stuck in this cycle longer. And so now, if ever I feel like, ooh, it's about to start, like I feel like it's something's coming in my back, I go outside, I start walking, I'll go for a run. And it's so counterintuitive because you think that pain should equate to rest. But I think there's a part of it too, is just reminding the body that everything is okay. Remembering that pain is also just this natural mechanism that the body has to help keep you safe, to avoid any further injury, and just kind of control what you're doing that day. But still, there's very, very big psychological component. The same thing when we talk about white sugar or white flour. These are the things that when I eat, I'll feel in my back. And so we have to also start looking at movement a little bit differently and food a little bit differently, because diet culture has told us that, yeah, eat less, move more, and that should give you your results. And I've actually seen that over and over and over and over again fail, because there is also a certain point where the calorie deficit now starts to work against you, right? And so now it's really focusing on quality of food, quality of movement, but for an even better reason, a more profound reason than it just being how much we weigh. And so, again, curious for you, how do you package that up for somebody? So, what would necessarily be, let's say, a typical case that you would see that you would maybe work with somebody around? How would you help them just incorporate all of those factors, again, considering that they're likely coming from absolutely scratch?
Well, I mean, like I said, we were talking about how can we take somebody from sedentary that already has maybe aversions or uncertainties with moving or strength training or picking up a dumbbell, and how can you bridge that gap so that they start to get some predictable results, albeit with getting rid of their pain, but also, maybe they're decreasing their weight or getting to a better state. The thing I want to share, because you're talking about the rest part, that's education is huge. I serve a lot of people from an online basis worldwide. So education and knowledge has to be at the forefront. There's something called absolute rest versus relative rest, where absolute rest, if you feel like a tweak in your back, you're just watching Netflix and just lying on the couch and hoping and praying that it's going to go away, which it will. All pain does go away at some point, but then your body's like stiffer and weaker as a result of that. Relative rest is what you're talking about, which is, okay, let me just play with my movement. Let me see what my body allows and essentially get past it faster. And maybe you get back to you some of your activities a little bit quicker. I guess starting off with how I would start off with that person is, usually you want to get a good baseline of their strength and mobility. So I'm taking them through different types of tests, like, squat, or maybe see if they can hold a plank for a given amount of time. And maybe they can't. Maybe they can't hold it for longer than 5 seconds, which is fine. But at least all I'm telling them is like, don't feel bad about it. Just treat that as objective data, right? Do not get emotional about your current state. Just because you got yourself here doesn't mean you're going to stay here, right? You can clearly make some changes. So once you get a baseline of their strength and mobility, I'm usually building out a plan. I have like my own app, and there's a lot of video demonstrations for all my exercises. And once I kind of get them to a place where they're at least saying, hey, daily, I'm going to commit myself to, 10, 20 minutes of mobility. I might do a little bit of strength training here. Is eventually they start to see that the results are working. I've been in the space long enough where I'd be like, hey, once I give you this exercise, you give them certainty. You promise me you'll do this and you'll get a certain result. And that's part of the therapeutic alliance I'm sure that you share with your own clients is, you give them certainty. If you're just giving them an exercise plan, they're still uncertain. But if you give them certainty, like I promise you that if you do these neck and back exercises, right? I've been there. I've had neck and back pain. So if you do these and you follow exactly as I do, you will get there. So that therapeutic alliance is so key. That if you don't create that alliance and rapport, they're going to be non-compliant and they're not going to do what you say. And also placebo, nocebo, it's like they're not going to have the belief that what you're doing actually works. So having that belief is huge. But once you get yourself out of that hole, then you start to layer in just little steps at a time. So okay, now that your strength getting stronger and you're noticing some flexibility, let's start to learn the nutrition. So I generally like to give my clients very simple meal plans, things that are more like whole food based. Sometimes it's eliminating certain things, out of the diet that may be more pro-inflammatory. But ultimately, letting them know that protein is probably one of the biggest macronutrient that 90% of people that I talk to probably don't get enough protein in, right? And protein has been shown to just maintain lean body mass for the aging individual. So it's huge just to stress that. And you can get protein in from many different places: meat, poultry, plant-based. There's a lot of ways, and there's something called the DIAD score that kind of teaches you about the quality of the protein that you're getting in is it's critical. So once they're at a place where their protein levels are higher, they probably notice that their energy levels skyrocket. They're putting on more lean body mass. They're looking better. They're feeling better. They have more endurance and capacity to do things at work. So I mean, that's why I like what I do. And ultimately, once they start to get there, you're really just progressing them to the point of, can you make this sustainable? Can we create the habits necessary so that meal prepping and strength training actually becomes embedded into your life and doesn't become an option anymore?
Wow, so good, so good. This is the purest example of a person-first approach. It is so powerful. Okay, so I'm curious now, if you're open to it, if you could actually walk us through what a typical day in Dr. Jason's life is like. So what do you do in the morning? And then you mentioned you move like 10 times a day. So walk us through that. What are your rituals, for example?
Yeah, so my rituals currently, it's and I'm you know they say this is not actually true, but they say like men tend to be just like more creatures of habits, and then women can elicit a lot of emotion that confounds, and that there might be some truth to that. Women are a little bit more emotional, so therefore they might get stuck in their head and stop exercising. But in any case, like my typical thing that I do, and this is just bred from, again, I started my nutrition strength journey at 11 years old. So my typical thing right now, I have two kids, so I've had to adapt my schedule. One's 5 months old, one is 2.5 years old. So my current schedule as of now is I wake up before anybody else, usually 5:45, 5:50 in the morning. I get in, I already have my pre-workout meal available. It's already on the counter. So that way it eliminates the need to like actually set it up. But once I get in my protein, my oatmeal, get in some fruit, you know, get in a very nutritious diet, 2 to 4 cups of water in the morning. I immediately go downstairs. I start lifting weights and start doing some cardiovascular activity. And once I get a good sweat in, that usually starts off my day so well. It's like you feel this way. You know, after exercise, more stimulation to the brain. There's serotonin and dopamine release. You feel amazing. Your energy levels are up. Your productivity is there. Once I do that, 2 to 3 days out of the week, I have to drop off my son. After I drop him off for day school, I'm back at work and I'm setting up my meetings, my client meetings, my meetings with my team. In between sessions, this is where I don't really count this as like exercise sessions, but you know, I essentially call them like strength breaks or stretch breaks, right? So I kind of embed it in. Like after I get off this podcast, for example, every Zoom call that I do, I get down to the floor and I foam roll. After every time I go to up to upstairs to a meal, I do 50 push-ups with like my son on my back, and then
That's
I'm ready to go. So, and you know, showers, brushing teeth, whether I'm at a grocery store, I throw in all these like little habit breaks, you know, essentially saying whenever like I pair it up with whatever I do in life that's already habitual, I'm going to pair it with some sort of exercise or movement. And that's essentially how I get in upwards of 30 to 60 minutes of exercise without even trying, without any actual planned exercise. I guess that's my typical day, end the day with gratitude, dinner with my family. I'm usually sleeping, usually around 10 to 11 a.m. Usually I try to have it screen free and I'm just trying to relax. And usually at the end of the day, I kiss my wife goodnight, say I love her every single day. I kiss my son every single day. And I just end the day with gratitude. And gratitude is another thing I talk about a lot in terms of how it actually keeps your DNA healthy and ultimately it creates a lot of great hormones, oxytocin, that prevents decay of your DNA essentially.
Wow, so good, so good. So one thing I am curious about just after you shared, so I know you were saying growing up and especially in that childhood time where you were getting bullied a lot for, let's say, your weight and maybe how you ate. Are there any remnants of that right now today, just with your relationship with food or even just your relationship with your own body?
That's actually a really good question. I've had not a lot of people ask that question, and I do appreciate you sharing that. I read a lot of books, and one book is called Rewired by Ski Chulten. And that book has really changed the way that I want to think, as in sometimes the way we manage stress is not just a product of just who you are as a human, but as a product of sometimes the abuse, the trauma that you've been through. And I think that considering that obviously I've lost my dad, that was a huge emotional trauma in my life. My grandpa got hit by a truck, you know, in high school, dead on the spot. And I think also, you know, with a lot of the trauma that I went through, I think it was a pretty traumatic to go a full kind of year to year and a half of just feeling very isolated and feeling like I didn't have friends or all that. I think that literally it doesn't just stay with you as like, oh, it's just repressed memories. It actually changes your DNA. It actually rewires your brain. There's something called neuroplasticity, and that can be positive or negative, right? Trauma actually changes the way that your brain perceives threat, tension, anxiety. And so I think that a lot of times when I was growing my business and growing my reputation, not just in the Bay Area, but worldwide. There was a lot of times where like I would just crumble into a ball and be like, what am I doing? Like I'm not built for this, right? Who am I to say that I'm gonna have like a larger impact on the world? Why can't I just be a standard PT in California and just like work a job, for 30 years and just retire? No, I wanted something bigger than that. But I always got into my head on terms of how I did that. And I think a lot of the trauma and things, we have to address that. We have to bring that to the surface and see how that's actually creating different identity pieces, a negative identity of ourselves, negative thoughts that kind of fill into our head, saying that you're unworthy. And I think that sense of identity obviously creates negative beliefs, negative actions. It creates subpar results, and it kind of just perpetuates this feedback loop that you're stuck in. So I think that, yeah, considering the types of trauma and things that I've been through, no doubt that that still stays with me today. But reading books like this that essentially bring that to the surface, that you can actually rewire your brain to have a more fulfilling life, to be more grateful for your situation. You might be poor, you might be in chronic pain, but you still have family, you still have support. And I think it's always good to just understand that neuroplasticity is still something that's huge. It's huge. And I think that ultimately it should be something that should be spoken about more about.
Wow, so good, so good. And I want to thank you so much for being so honest and vulnerable and just feeling like this is a safe space to share. And what I've always noticed is, so someone like you, right? So we started the interview, and anyone who jumped in at the beginning, the way you're speaking, you're very confident, you're so knowledgeable, it's so cool what you're doing, you're really impacting people. But then to hear that element of that there is actually this grain of self-doubt that comes in every now and then, that we all actually experience the same fears of life. We fear to fail, we fear that we're not enough. And then to hear you just voice that, I find is so incredibly comforting, because I have my moments of not enoughness too. Like, what the heck am I doing? Like, am I even up for this? Like, who's even gonna live, right? And so you're in that space. But then what I also hear you saying is that you're able to look past that, that it's not just about you, that it is for the greater good, and ultimately you're using that to help others. And so that's definitely something that I think, again, we all need to hear, and we need to just understand that a lot of us have gone through traumas too. That trauma is there to allow us to continue to stay as a victim, or we can use that to our advantage. And it seemed that what you've gone through with your father and just experiencing that also allowed you to have that compassion and that love for others, and to give that to them. And it's interesting, one of my mentors had told me this. She said, those who are the most successful are actually always struggling with not enoughness. Because that's why they're pushing themselves. Like, there's still that element of, no, I still need to be better. I still have to do more. Like, I still need to keep going. And so there's almost like this fine balance where you can use that part of you to actually fuel what you're doing in such a positive and impactful way. So thanks again for
Yeah,
sharing that. And
appreciate that.
so as we wrap it up today, it's been such a beautiful conversation, Dr. Jason. Is there anything else that you wanted to share that you didn't have a chance to just yet?
Yeah, I've been saying this quote a good amount, and hopefully it resonates with your audience or with people that generally are struggling with pain or struggling with self-doubt. Am I good enough? Is avoidance is the enemy. And I think that what that means is we sometimes, if you have a specific pain, we oftentimes say, well, I can't do this sport anymore. I can't do the things that I used to do. Well, avoidance is the thing that really is going to keep you in your place. And fear of pain and fear of yourself, fear of your own diagnoses, your medical diagnoses, is sometimes worse than the pain or the symptoms itself, right? The fear and the doubt is actually more self-limiting. So when you hear it that way, you have to think about kind of grading and slowly exposing yourself to that activity that you wanted to do. Now, whether that's just your day-to-day chores or whether that's you picking up your child again for the first time because your back always hurts, is to say to yourself that you can. I said this, it put me to tears when my wife was like, why do you work so hard? Why do you exercise so much? Why do you do this? And I said to her, I was like, 'cause I never want to say no to my family. I never want to say no, I can't. So with when if you can kind of get to that point, like if you have kids, you'll see your kids smile, and you'll see, even if your kids are older, just see them grow up, see that that was a part of you, and understand that you avoiding the things that you need to do to take action is actually more limiting than anything else. So if you start to take little tiny extra steps in the right direction, you stop avoiding painful activities, you just start to kind of empower yourself to think you're enough. I think that's when your life truly changes. But again, you just got to start off with little small action steps that eventually lead to that massive transformation that you desire.
Thank you so much for that. What a beautiful way to end this Beautiful conversation. And you know, again, just to honor you for what you've shared here today, because you are a role model for your kids, and everything that you're doing, this impacts them directly. This reflects the norms, the values, the all the things that are really important. And what a beautiful investment in their future. And I hope that you recognize that. And I know that we know that, but sometimes we actually need to hear that one more time, because sometimes we need that reminder that what we're doing is the right thing. And I want to thank you for the work that you're doing and for helping so many people get out of chronic pain. It is so important. And I hope that you continue this journey and continue to see the success that you deserve. I've loved every moment of this conversation, Dr. Jason. I love you so much for being here today, and thank you so much for sharing this time together.
Perfect. I appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thanks for listening to this episode of Fall in Love with Fitness. Whether you're already on your fitness journey or just getting started, we're in this together. Just head on over to iTunes, subscribe, and leave a review, and you'll be entered into the drawing to win my 6-week transformation course. Then go to fallinlovewithfitness.com and get your free gift from me so you get back your energy and reinvigorate your life. Join me on the next episode, and remember, you are an inspiration.